What makes you lust after other people? I'm guessing that kind of conversation might not be quite so encouraging. But we must not avoid this topic. Now, a few generations ago, I guess a lot of churches wouldn't have dared talk about sex, because society in general didn't really talk about it then. It obviously happened, but it was under the radar at that point. Not anymore. Today, and I appreciate it's been like this for some time, and it's getting more extreme perhaps with social media and the internet. But today it obviously sells magazines and newspapers. When I was growing up, pornography used to be on the top shelf for the news agents, quite difficult to get hold of it. Now, of course, you can access it at the press of a button. Children and young people are increasingly sexualized. I saw this heading this week: lockdown linked to tenfold rise in child sex imagery. And when I talk about the sexualization of children, I don't just mean that kind of abuse, just the stuff that are taught to children at much younger age today. Peer pressure amongst, get rid of that, I'm not sure that's working. There you go. So peer pressure, for example, to have sex is perhaps greater than ever. And then you've got things like sexual harassment being far more widely recognised. I'm sure it's always happened, but it's recognised much more today, and that's, I'm sure, a good thing. We've got the Me Too movement, for example, and when you hear that apparently hundreds of Met police officers are currently being investigated for abuse against women, well, you can see why we need movements like that. If the church wants to be relevant to today's society, we need to be engaging with what is going on out there. So we can't avoid talking about sex. And the Bible certainly engages with this subject as well. Jesus didn't shy away from talking about it. So in this most famous of Jesus's talks, it is right up there. After the anger and conflict section that we looked at last week, just before honesty and integrity, before anxiety and worry. As Jesus explains how life is meant to be lived in this kingdom of his that he's announcing, he addresses the issues that need to be announced. I'm not sure this is working, I'm afraid. Don't know. Never mind. Maybe you could guess where the next slide should be. Give next a little task. Thank you. That's great. Not particularly important at this point, I realise. And Jesus speaks, as we've seen over these last two or three weeks, he speaks with unique authority. Because nobody else could speak like this. When he says, "You've heard it said," he says, "This is what I say. This is how things really are. This is how you've misunderstood even what God has said in the past." And what Jesus says, as we look through this, I'm sure you saw that last week, everything he says is so obviously right. It is so obviously true, but it does cut right to the heart. It affects every one of us. So last week, quick recap, they thought at that time that it was just about murder, just about this act of murder. And Jesus says, actually, it's a bit more than that. It's about the symptoms of murder, the root, the cause, which of course is anger, it's contempt, it's malice. They're the things that you've got to root out if you're truly going to live this good life that Jesus brings. Now, we all know that. But this week's a little bit different because it's not quite so acceptable in today's kind of Western world. Are you going to replace that for me? Thank you. Lovely. I probably should have apologised, actually, to those watching online this morning. Apparently, the microphone wasn't working earlier on as well, so I'm sorry if you missed a few minutes of our worship together. Welcome to you, by the way. Great to have you with us. So So we all know that you have to deal with the root causes of these issues. But this week is different because it is not so acceptable in today's Western world to say that adultery is wrong. Just as it's pretty straightforward, isn't it, to say that murder is wrong? I think we all kind of get that today. Although I do wonder, as the world develops, maybe in 50 years' time we'll be saying that murder's okay as well, actually. Having said that, there are a few cases where we already do that, if you really think about it. When it comes to sex, people say, well, it's a free choice. We're not really designed, are we, to have one partner for life? Marriage is a bit old-fashioned. Well, this week, Jesus says, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. And it's the seventh, by the way, of the Ten Commandments that were given to Moses back in the book of Exodus. So it's in the top ten, if you like. It's clearly something that God sees as being important. And maybe a little bit like murder, you might think, well, avoiding adultery, well, it's not impossible. Keeping sexual activity within a marriage relationship is rarer these days, that's certainly true, but it's not impossible. There are people here, thankfully amongst us, who have achieved that, I'm sure. Plenty of people of other faiths, people of no faith, they've gone through life with just one partner or with no partners. It's not easy, but it is kind of doable. And, like not committing murder, there were people in Jesus' day, as he was speaking, who would be going around thinking, or even saying, I'm okay, I've not committed adultery, I'm right with God, I've ticked that box. And also, like murder, Jesus comes along and says, actually, it's not that simple. The underlying cause of adultery is still there in most people. And it's called lust. It's looking at a woman or at a man, obviously, who's not your spouse and wishing you could have sex with them. Jesus says, verse 28 here, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And that's a bit of a problem for some of us, perhaps all of us, if we really think about it. It puts most of us in the same category as kind of last week, where we were looking at anger, contempt, and malice. We are guilty as charged. It's the box that's not quite so nicely ticked as we thought. Now, I appreciate some of you might well still be thinking, but really, how can we possibly equate adultery with murder? It's nothing like as serious. Less than 1%, far less than 1%, ever commit murder. But loads of people have sex outside of marriage. What's the big deal? It doesn't hurt anybody. That's the story that we're told. And this is why we have to look a little bit harder and think a bit harder to see God's perspective. Now, sex, by the way, is a good thing. It's a gift from God. Just in case you were thinking that Christians are anti-sex or anything, we're certainly not. Sex is this amazing gift from God, and it's not just for making babies. It's the ultimate expression of intimacy between two people who are committed exclusively to one another in a loving union. It's the two becoming one flesh expression that we see through the Bible and expressed directly in Genesis, and Jesus himself repeats it. It's a physical picture of this spiritual identity, I suppose, that a faithful God has, or spiritual relationship that a faithful God has with people that he is committed to. And that is why it is so offensive to God when we end up putting somebody or something ahead of him in our list of priorities. Sex is a good thing. But of course, so is fire. And when fire is safely contained within a fireplace or an area outside that's designed for its purpose, of course, it provides warmth, it provides heat, it provides energy and the light that it's designed for. But as we well know, fire in the wrong place, well, it's devastatingly destructive. Forest fires around the world recently have reminded us of that. Children have to be warned, don't they? It's one of the first things we teach our children, keep away from fire. Fire is good and vital on the one hand, but in the wrong place, it is terrifying. Sex is a bit like fire. Inside a loving marriage, it can be the glue that binds us together. Outside of marriage, it distorts our minds, it devalues commitment, it tears relationships apart, and it leads to all kinds of damage and abuse. And that's why Jesus takes it so seriously. Treat it like fire, he says. Be very careful. And he uses this very, very strong language that we see in verses 29 and 30. And I'm just going to read that again, just to emphasize the strength of what Jesus is saying about this issue. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Now, certainly those that I've read, every Bible commentator will agree that this is not an instruction to be taken literally. So please don't go home and start gouging your eyes out. It will make a horrible mess, and it won't solve the problem, more importantly. Sadly, some Christians have done this kind of thing, and it can become just another kind of religious exercise, as if self-flagellation, as it's called, somehow kind of gets us right with God. It doesn't. The heart inside, which is where all of this stuff comes from, well, that's still there. You could try extracting that, but I'm guessing that would have even more severe consequences. The heart is still the same, whatever you do to other parts of your body. So please do keep your eyes. Don't go away and cut your hands off. On the other hand, do take serious action. And I don't mean from this just avoiding the opposite sex or whatever it is that you're attracted to. It doesn't mean joining a monastery. The action that we're called to take is called self-control. It may include turning off your computer or having a kind of an accountability partner. It certainly includes understanding how serious this is. Recognizing if it is a particular area of vulnerability. Asking Jesus for help. Asking him for forgiveness. And clearly not giving up. And there are Christian resources, other resources that are able to help us in these things. And do look those things up. But like living for Jesus in every other aspect of life, it certainly includes drawing near to him in prayer. It includes reading our Bibles. It includes fellowship, coming together like this with other believers, talking with others, perhaps sharing some of your problems in a confidential setting. And knowing also, most importantly, knowing that when you do fail, you're not suddenly and automatically going to get cast out of God's kingdom, cast out of God's presence. So you rest on the love and security and the peace that comes through trusting in the cross of Christ. Now, before we move on, I just wanted to highlight the difference between the kind of lusting that Jesus talks about here, because there's a danger we end up making ourselves feel more guilty than we should. There's a difference between lusting, in terms of what Jesus is saying here, which clearly is wrong, he's making that absolutely clear, but also temptations in general, which in themselves are not sinful. So noticing that somebody is attractive is not the same as starting to think about what they'd look like without any clothes on. There is a difference, and I think we all know that. Martin Luther, the great reformer in the 1500s, he had a really helpful saying. He said, you can't keep the birds from flying over your head. Let me read the whole thing from up there. Temptations, of course, cannot be avoided. But because we cannot prevent the birds from flying over our heads, there is no need that we should let them nest in our hair. We can keep them. I hope that makes some sense, by the way. This is meant to be helpful. You can't stop the birds kind of flying around. That obviously makes sense. They're going to do that anyway. But you can't, not that anybody's really tempted to let them build a nest in your head, I'm sure. But imagine one does land on your head. You can kind of push that away. That is within our powers to do. We can stop them nesting in our heads. Maybe that was a thing when he was around. He actually went on to say, you can't keep the devil from suggesting thoughts, but you can choose not to dwell or act on them. So I think it's really helpful. It's not absolutely true, because we certainly can avoid places. We can avoid websites, for example, that we know will bring us such temptations. We can do that. And we must do that. But once we've kind of allowed these birds, as it were, to start nesting in our heads, well, we definitely become responsible at that point. So, sex is good in the right context. Otherwise, in the wrong context, it is highly dangerous. I found this verse in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, really helpful. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. I think that's probably what the Apostle Paul had in his mind when he wrote to the believers in Philippi chapter 4, verse 8. He said, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. We can set up as many different rules and barriers as we like, and perhaps it might well be helpful to do some of those things. It'll only ultimately be drawing near to Christ, seeking the power of his Spirit, that will help us in these areas. God will help you. He's promised to help you, but of course you need to want his help. If you're kind of superficially asking for his help, when inwardly you really don't want to change, you probably won't see any change. Well, Jesus isn't quite finished on this topic, and we must look at the last couple of verses here before we finish. It's headed divorce, but I think it's actually more about the value of marriage. Jesus said, it has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, makes her the victim of adultery, and anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. And so it's another one of these kind of it has been said sayings, which Jesus started his teaching with. And to understand this one, we need to be a bit more aware of the original context. The Jewish audience listening to Jesus, they would have known kind of what came next. In any kind of sentence, you might start with a few words, but if you're familiar with that sentence, you'll be able to repeat whatever comes next. Well, for us, as we see these words, where it says, I tell you, anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality makes... the first bit, it has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. That on its own probably doesn't mean very much, and we've got no idea about the context. Well, the context is in Deuteronomy chapter 24. I'm going to put it up on the screen, and I'm going to read this. If you want to look it up, it's verses 1 to 4, Deuteronomy chapter 24. And Jesus is kind of quoting from here, assuming that the people understood the rest of the context, which they would have done then. He says, or rather, Deuteronomy 24 says, if a man marries a woman or becomes displeasing to him because he finds something indecent about her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her, and sends her from his house, and if after she leaves his house, she becomes the wife of another man, and her second husband dislikes her, and writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her, and sends her from his house, or if he dies, then her first husband, who divorced her, is not allowed to marry her again after she's been defiled. That would be detestable in the eyes of the Lord. Do not bring sin upon the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. Now, that probably still doesn't make a lot of sense, but you might have noticed a few phrases there, which at first glance look pretty horrifying. It can look as if God is pretty okay with divorce from this passage. If a woman becomes displeasing to her husband, who happens to find something indecent about her, or if her second husband dislikes her. So what does this mean? And when exactly is divorce permitted? Well, at the time of Jesus, I'm sure it had been going on for a long time, there was a debate amongst the Jews as to what this meant. And there were two kind of broad opinions here. There were those who still thought that it was unfaithfulness, sexual immorality, that was the only grounds for divorce. And then there was another group, only men, of course, who thought they could divorce their wives for any reason whatsoever. And some of the examples, well, they're quite amusing, really, if they weren't so horrifying. But overcooking the dinner, for example, was a good excuse for divorcing your wife. Or not looking quite so attractive as she used to. It was apparently a good reason to divorce your wife. And in that culture, in the culture that Jesus was living in at the time, women were completely dependent upon their husbands. This is why we have to understand the context a bit, because it is quite different now. They were dependent on their husbands for money, for status, for friendship, even possibility of holding on and keeping their own children at times. So you can imagine the odds were stacked against the women if men could somehow trade them in as and when they felt like it. You can imagine the kind of fear that women would have lived in and their almost determination somehow to keep their husbands happy so that none of these things would happen to them. Well, what Jesus is saying here, when he talks about this certificate of divorce stuff, he is saying that he is completely against such oppression of women. He hates that. There is to be equality in marriage. He's very much for the faithful honouring of marriage vows. Those things are absolutely clear in what Jesus says here. Anyone who divorces their wife except for sexual immorality, that person makes her a victim. So when it says she becomes a victim of adultery if she remarries, that the emphasis here is on the husband who has divorced her, making her a victim. It's not that she somehow intentionally becomes sinful, but the responsibility is with the husband who has divorced her. Now, I know this is a sensitive topic because a number of people in the church here, perhaps sitting here this morning, have been through divorce. Mainly women who have experienced unfaithfulness and even abuse from their spouses. Now, God absolutely allows divorce in such situations like this, in order to protect you from such treatment. And it's because God cares. And therefore, if you do remarry, you're not committing adultery, and neither does the person who marries you. That should be clear. But it's not like God is saying, okay, divorce is fine. God really dislikes, he even goes as far as saying he hates divorce. But it's more that he hates the reasons for divorce. The concept of marriage is based on God's relationship with his church. The bridegroom giving himself for the bride. The bride gladly submitting to her loving husband. That is how things are meant to be. Marriage is a gift. It's not a gift that everybody is given. But for those who do receive it, it comes with a whole host of blessings, including companionship, including sex, including children in many cases. But those blessings are fully experienced only where there is an environment of unconditional love and faithfulness. So there's a lot in these few verses to take in. Certainly too much for one talk, as I've discovered as I've been researching it these last week or two. Perhaps we'll need to come back to it at some point. But I want us to finish with something that Jesus said on a separate occasion, when he was specifically asked about the subject of divorce. So this is a different occasion. This is when Jesus was sitting down with his disciples and teaching them about various different things, various different aspects of living in his kingdom. There was another occasion recorded for us in Matthew chapter 19. You don't have to turn to it now. But this is where he was tested by some teachers of the law at that time, some of the religious leaders. And they came to him and asked this question about divorce because they knew it was controversial. They knew there was at least two different views on or how to interpret this passage from back in Deuteronomy. So they came to him and tested him. And Jesus said this as part of his response. He said, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not this way from the beginning. At the end of the day, the only reason that God ever allowed divorce is because of hardness of hearts. Marriages, they can survive all sorts of things. Some of you will know this. Sometimes they can survive even sexual unfaithfulness where there is true repentance and forgiveness. But a marriage without that kind of love is a marriage only in name. And that kind of love, we need to understand, is not a kind of feeling that comes and goes. So we can say, you know, I was in love when I got married, but actually now it's all gone. So that's a good excuse for giving up that commitment. It's not the kind of love that excuses us from a commitment if we just don't feel in love anymore. This kind of love is a choice. Married couples are called to love one another, whether they feel in love or not. And those feelings always come and go. Just as God loved us, not because we were very lovable, we're not very lovable, but he loved us because he chose to love us. And it's no coincidence that this guidance from Jesus about sex, about relationships, it comes straight after his guidance on anger and contempt. And the reason we do often lust after others is because ultimately we don't respect them. We don't love them. And we're treating them with contempt. Think about maybe your own experiences of lust and consider what is going on in your heart towards that person that you might be lusting afterwards. You're not respecting them. And the reason we often seek an easy way out of commitment is because we lack respect for our marriage vows. We lack respect for those that we've married. And we lack respect for the promises that we've made. And next week, Jesus talks about why we should keep our promises. Amen. I just want to close a little bit, perhaps like we did last week. As we think about these things in prayer, and just reflect on what Jesus is saying. So perhaps to start with, you may well know somebody who's been a victim of sexual abuse. Perhaps it's you. You may know others. People who have been lusted after. People who have been harassed. People who have been raped or trafficked. And if you don't know of an individual, think about the general context. There's no doubt these things are going on so much, very, very close to where we are. Let's just take a moment to lift to the Lord those that are in such situations. Pray that he will bring healing, that he will bring his comfort, his goodness, his spirit into these situations, even somehow good could come out of it. Just as Laura was quoting that verse from Romans chapter 28, could God even bring good out of such situations? Let's just ponder that as we bring our prayers to God quietly for a moment.